You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Today, I'm happy to welcome back to the podcast Weatherman and Today Show co-host Al Roker. In his 40 years in broadcasting, Al's just about seen it all and learned some hard-won lessons along the way. Now he's sharing some of those lessons, or altruisms as he likes to call them, in his new book titled You Look So Much Better in Person, True Stories of Absurdity and Success. And today, Al returns to the show to tell stories from the Today Show and his early days in local television, including how he annoyed his way to his first gig as a TV weatherman, some of his worst on-air flubs, and what he loved about doing those quirky feel-good segments at the end of your evening news. He says every local news team has their own version of Ron Burgundy, recalls working with a young Maury Povich back when Maury was still a serious DC newsman, and how he once handled a racist comment from another news anchor on live television. Al shares the best piece of advice he got from his mentor and predecessor on Today, Willard Scott, and why he believes that five-year plans are greatly overrated. He also takes me through his daily routine that begins with waking up at 3:45 a.m. for the Today Show and reveals what happened the one time he overslept. Plus his favorite encounter during his daily live shot from outside on Rockefeller Plaza, his brief stint as a Broadway musical star, and his riskiest in-person encounter with a major hurricane. Coming up with Al Roker in just a moment. Al Roker has earned 13 Emmy Awards as longtime weather and feature anchor of NBC's Today Show and the co-host of the third hour of Today. He's also a New York Times best-selling author with many acclaimed books to his credit, including his latest, titled You Look So Much Better in Person, True Stories of Absurdity and Success. Al Roker, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Ben. Good to talk to you again.
Well, yeah, it's great to have you back. Now, last time we talked about your terrific book on the Johnstown flood, but your latest book seems to be a lot more personal. In fact, I think that you say that the title, You Look So Much Better in Person, is something that you hear all the time from fans at the Today Show, right?
Yeah, I usually go out, this is obviously pre-pandemic, but I'd go out at about 7:50 because I'd have about 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd schmooze and, you know, take pictures or whatever. And literally every day, somebody would usually say, oh my gosh, you look so much better in person. And I was like, well, you know I'm on TV, right? Because it's not really a compliment.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't want to be rude. And you say, so you say, thank you. That's awfully nice. Thank you so much for insulting the way I look. I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm just going to go now and lay down in front of a bus.
Now, as viewers of the Today Show know, you do these live shots from outside of Rockefeller Plaza, or at least you used to pre-pandemic, where you mix and mingle with the throngs of fans every day. What's the strangest or most interesting encounter that you've had out there on the plaza?
Actually, it's funny you mention that because I'm wearing a thong right now. Anyway, I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. We had this guy, you know, people always come with signs, you know, you do this, will you do that? And this one sign said, Jill, will you marry me? And our producer at the time was Jeff Zucker, who now runs CNN and HBO and all that stuff. Anyway, so I see the sign, and Jeff says in my ear, in the little earpiece, don't do it, don't go over there. So I'm thinking, no, I'm going to go over. Come on. So I said, so you're in love with Jill. You want her to marry you. I said, well, I really care about Jill, but I love Jeff more. And with that, turns to the guy next to him and gives him a big open mouth kiss. And I look at the camera and I said, see, and they won't even show you that on Will and Grace. And then just kept going. And Zucker's like, damn you. But the upshot was that the folks at Will and Grace, because it was on the air at the time, they wrote it into the script, and they came down, and James Burrows came with them, and they filmed me interviewing just Jack and Will, and they kissed, they recreate the kiss on camera. So it was kind of, I got two bites at the apple.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a nice little NBC plug that you slipped in there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Has one of the downsides of this pandemic been that you can't get out there and mix it up and talk with the folks these days?
Yeah, it's look, I mean, we've got none of it. Forget about being able to mix it up with the folks. I can't mix it up with the folks I work with.
Right.
You know, at least in person, yeah. You know, we're all in boxes. You know, now Craig and Savannah and Hoda have been in off and on. Carson's popped in. I'm the only one who hasn't come in yet, but I'm also the oldest person in the group. So, in fact, my 66th is coming up in August.
Wow.
Yes, I also miss our audience, you know, going out there, and because that's part of the allure of the show. That's part of the fun of the show is, you know, having these folks hanging out and, brings us a certain amount of energy.
Yeah.
And so I don't know when we're going to get back to that or if we're going to get back to that.
Yeah. Now, on camera, you're very lively and personable, but it might surprise some people to learn that off camera, I guess you tend to prefer your quiet alone time. You don't much care for parties or socializing and chit-chat. You're sort of an introvert, and I wonder...
I am.
When you decided to go into television, did you find that you had to sort of force yourself to be more extroverted than might come naturally?
Well, here's the thing. I never planned to be on TV.
Okay.
As I talked about, and you look so much better in person, I wanted to be a writer or a producer, and it was only because my department chairman at SUNY Oswego put me up for a weekend weather job that I even considered going on TV. I mean, I kept remember thinking, does he know who I am? Because he can see me. I'm a balding, chunky, glasses-wearing black guy, and there's nobody on TV that looks like this.
Yeah.
when I have my downtime, I much prefer, you know, small, like getting together with two or three other couples or just hanging with the family. Even Deborah's family, when they first met me, they were like, does he not like us? Because he seems a lot more subdued than when he's on TV. And I'm like,
really?
No, I like you. I'm not working right now. I mean, wouldn't it be kind of weird if I was like, hey, right, here's what's happening in your neighborhood. What are you going? Hey, yeah, yeah. Oh, hey.
Who wants to be around that guy?
No, who wants that guy? My family barely wants to be around me when I'm normal. You know, I'm a bit of a, but you know, it's interesting. Willard talks about my mentor.
Willard Scott, your predecessor.
Yeah, Willard Scott. Yeah, he suffered from anxiety. He said he would always take a lick of a Prozac before he went on the air.
You're kidding.
No. You know, and again, here's a man who made his living. I mean, he was the original, or one of the original Bozo the Clowns. He created Ronald McDonald. And was a radio host with his college roommate. They were called the Joy Boys. They were like the highest rated morning show in D.C. He did all this stuff and yet suffered from anxiety. So,
didn't realize that. And you know, of course, people who have been watching the Today Show for a long time may recall that you eventually replaced Willard, but I didn't realize just how far back you and Willard went and what a big influence he was on your life. How did you first meet Willard, Scott?
I was doing the weather at WTTG in Washington, D.C., which was then Metro Media, later became Fox. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a great station at the time. It's a powerhouse now. But back then, you know, nobody, it's... demographic skewed 90 and older, you know, it just was not a great spot. And one day out of the blue, I get a call from Willard Scott. He's like, hey, is this Al Roker? I said, yeah. Come on, let's go to dinner. What do you got planned for dinner? I said, nothing. Well, come on. And so I go outside the station, and there's Willard on Wisconsin Avenue in this bright red Cadillac convertible. And I get in, and I figure we're going somewhere. And he basically makes a U-turn and parks across the street. And we go to this Italian restaurant. And I'm in awe. I'm sitting here because back then, Willard was the number one personality. Forget about Weatherman. Yeah. He was the number one personality in Washington, D.C. And it just, it grew from there. And I consider him my second dad. I really do.
Really? Yeah, much like you. He always came off as just such a big, gregarious teddy bear on television who just really seemed to love his job and love life and loved people. Was he pretty much like that in person, too?
Yeah. Yeah, what you saw was what you got. You know, he was such a character. Like on TV, in the especially through the earlier years of the Today Show, but at WRC and the Today for a while, he would wear a toupee. But as soon as he got off the air, he threw it in the desk drawer and just went out, you know, and, you know, he'd be
hey,
at dinner with him.
That's one way to not be recognized, I guess. That's the perfect
everybody
back there.
No, because his face, and you'd see him, and he had this voice, and, you know, these beautiful women would come and kiss him on the, you know, on the top of his head. You know, he'd end up with three or four lipstick, you know, smudges. I mean, it was, I love being with him. And even now, you know, he's 86, but you go to dinner, you go to lunch with him, and people still love him. They come up to him. Hey, Willard, how you doing? They love him.
How many kisses on the forehead do you get when you go out?
Not so many.
No?
Not really so many. I don't know what it is.
Oh, what was the best piece of advice that Willard ever gave you?
It was the two, and they're both personally and professionally. Mm-hmm. Was the first one was always be yourself. You know, there's nobody can take that from you. Mm-hmm. That's you. That's yours. They can't take that from you. And the other one was never give up your day job. You know, no matter what I do, I still love being on the Today Show, and that's why most people end up talking to me because I'm on Today.
Yeah, as we say in Texas, you got to dance with them what brought you. So
there you go.
Well, to go back a little bit to your earlier years, a good portion of the book actually focuses on your early career at local TV stations as you worked your way up the ladder to the network. Tell us about your first job in TV in Syracuse.
Well, I was a college sophomore. I was finishing sophomore year. And as I mentioned, my college professor put me up for the job. And I was really excited about it. I went down to the station and did another audition. And the news director said, great, we'll be in touch. But coincidentally, at the same time, again, as I mentioned, I was going to be a junior. Their junior year, there was a foreign exchange program where we would go to London and study at the BBC.
Oh, wow.
And I was really excited. All my friends were going, but you had to put down a $500 deposit, which I had done. But there was a cutoff date where you could get your money back or else you forfeit it. Now, this is 1974. I mean, even today, $500 is $500. But in 1974, $500 was like worth like $2,000. And I wasn't going to hear about the job until after the cutoff date. So I pulled out of the program. Now I'm like morose. I'm thinking, oh, I'm not going to get this job. And I'm not going to be able to go to London. And I kept calling the station. And back then, they actually had switchboards. And I got to know the switchboard operator. As it turned out later, I found out her name was Rosie. And I would call and ask for the news director, Andy Brigham, please. Oh, hi, dear. No, Al, he's not in right now, but I'll tell him you call. And this would happen for a week. And finally, one day she goes, oh, hi, Al, just a minute. He's in. I'll put you through. And I'm like the dog that chases the car and then doesn't know what to do when he catches it. I'm stammering. Brigham, news. Mr. Brigham, it's Al Roker. Oh, geez. Yeah. The only way I'm going to get you off my ass is to give you this job. All right. So you got the job. Okay. I said, yeah. Any questions? No. Uh-oh. All right. Bye. Click. And then I realized I didn't ask him when I start. So I had to call back because we didn't even have a newsroom secretary back then. Yeah. So, and I got the gig and it was an exciting
your way into
time.
A job, huh?
I did. And I tell young people that today. Look, don't just text and email. Mm-hmm. Call. pick up the phone, make a connection, because nobody gets a connection from an email or a text. So, you know, LinkedIn, Schminkedin, all that stuff, call.
Yeah, and it's harder to turn you down when you're talking over the phone to someone in person rather than, you know, them just ignoring your email. That's a lot easier to do, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what did your mom say when you told her that you landed a job on Channel 5 in Syracuse?
So I grew up in New York City, greatest city in the world. I call up my mother. I'm 5 hours north of New York in Syracuse, maybe six, actually, because I was in Oswego. Going to school. But anyway, I call her up. I said, Mom, guess what? I just got a job on TV. I'm going to be a weatherman on Channel 5 here in Syracuse. She said, oh, that's great. I can watch you. I said, no, Mom, you can't see me. You're in New York City. But we have Channel 5 here. I said, no, I get that, Mom. But our Channel 5 in Syracuse is different than your Channel 5 in New York. Well, how can a 5 be different? Well, because they're different, Mom. This is WHEN-TV in New York. You're WNEW-TV. In New York City. I said, well, no, I'm going to go to the TV right now. You'll see. I said, no, Mom, it's not the same station. And we went on like that. But finally, she said, so what time are you on? I said, 6 o'clock Saturday. And then, of course, 6:30, 6:45, you know, I'm I decide to call my mother just to tell her it went okay. Call my parents, because this was before cell phones. And she said, I couldn't see you. No,
like an Abbott and Costello
really?
Routine.
You couldn't see me because I'm not going through this Abbott and Costello routine.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll return with more when we come back in just a moment. To me, it's just so funny how every city has their own version of that same local news gang. You have the Ron Burgundy type, the affable weatherman, the guy who does the exposés of local corruption. And I remember for me growing up in Houston, it was Marvin Zindler.
Marvin Zindler, Eyewitness News.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
How do you know Marvin Zindler?
Marvin Zindler was a legend.
Yeah, slime.
Marvin Zindler, Eyewitness News.
That's right.
Drove a big Cadillac.
Yeah. Wow. I'm really impressed, Al. I mean, there's almost something archetypal about local news teams that you just instantly recognize, whether you're watching TV in Sarasota or Kalamazoo, isn't there?
One of the things I like collecting are the slogans. Uh-huh. Live, local, late breaking. Yeah. Coverage you can count on. Coverage you can trust. You know, it's just, I love those. You know, I do miss that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And we had what was called the look up, you know, where it's the end promo shot of all the anchors. And we're all kind of, and look up to the camera, you know.
Yeah.
And they'd have you do it a couple of times. You're serious.
Oh, yeah.
Happy. Medium.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you first saw the movie Anchorman, did you recognize the characters and situations in the newsroom?
Oh, sure.
Is there some truth
you
to
know,
that?
One of the people who had a big impact on me was my first weekday Anchorman, because I started on weekends and then I moved to weekdays. And it was a guy named Ron Curtis. He was from Syracuse. His real name was Ron Ezzo, but you couldn't be ethnic on TV then. You know, like if you had a Polish last name or an Italian last name, they made you anglicize it. And he was just this guy, very prim and proper. He wasn't by any stretch of the imagination a buffoon, but he was serious. When he was in the office, he never took off his jacket, never loosened his tie.
Really?
And I remember being impressed by that.
Yeah,
you know?
Always camera ready.
Yeah, always ready to go.
YouTube is just full of clips of local news anchors letting an F-bomb slip or falling out of their chair and stuff like that. I wonder, what's the biggest on-air flub that you've ever witnessed when you were in local news?
Well, I did it. It was, I was at WNBC in New York, and I was trying to say warm air mass, and I said warm ass.
Now, how much did you get chewed out by your news director after that?
I didn't get chewed out. Nope. You know, the funny thing is, he didn't even see it. usually, and the funny thing is, in a control room, usually the weather segment is the time when everybody in the control room uses it to get ready for the next segment.
Okay.
Because we're kind of self-contained. Even before fancy computer graphics, all of our maps were on, you know, boards. So we were responsible in a way for our own graphics. The only thing they had to worry about was maybe if we had a chroma key, you know, showing the satellite loop.
Yeah.
But that was it. And now with weather graphics, they don't even, you know, they literally we are our own segment. You know, we can run everything through the weather computer.
Really? Now, in addition to doing weather, when you were doing local news, you often got assigned to doing those quirky little feel-good segments that usually come up at the end of a newscast.
The kicker.
And a lot of journalists always turn their nose up at those little pieces. But did you enjoy those? Did you like
them? I love them because it was the last thing people got to see in the newscast.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you could have fun.
Yeah.
You weren't bringing people bad news. And you could do goofy stuff. And people would, and people were really, you know, thrilled. They were happy to end after a, you know, 20 minutes of mayhem. You know, here's something that, okay, at least the world isn't going to completely to hell in a handbag.
Yeah. There's a funny story in here about how, I guess when you did these fun little segments, the local news anchor would just pester you with all of these follow-up questions that on the air that you weren't prepared for.
Yeah,
like,
well,
kind of put
it was funny.
Interrogation.
He was one of these guys who liked to trip people up to the point where now his wife was his co-anchor and he would do something. It was like some kicker where he'd say, "So Mona, what's the square root of 78 times?" And she go, "Well, Doug, I don't know." He goes, "Well, any third grader would tell you it's X, you know?" And you know, so it was like, wow, he just threw his wife under the bus. Unbelievable. Or our sports guy, this guy, Tom Ryder, would say, "Doug, listen, I'm going to do this story. I don't know about what, so don't ask me." And sure enough, it was like when Tom would say that, I'm thinking, no, don't tell him that. He's going to screw you, you know. And sure enough, he'd ask him. So, you'd see these, every now and then you get like, again, the kind of a little bit of a pompous anchor who would, you know, everybody else had to be a little lower to make him feel good.
Yeah, we know the type. And you also apparently worked with Maury Povich when you were at WTTG in D.C., I think, right?
I did.
Now, that was before he had a talk show and all the paternity tests and that sort of thing. Yep. What was he like back then?
Maury Povich, and he, look, he makes no bones about this. You know, he was a hard news journalist. He hosted a show called Panorama that was on our station, was watched by everybody on Capitol Hill and the White House. It was a mover and shaker type of program. And you know, he makes the joke that he was on network news. It was just, he was doing it one station at a time. He was in DC and Detroit and Chicago and LA and New York. And eventually, and then the talk show came up and, he pushed aside the journalism and went for this, but you know, it fills a need. And, but for me, he introduced me to my agent who, help. He told his agent, "Look, there's this kid here. You might want to take a look at him." Boom.
Well, when you started out in local news, I mean, let's be honest, there weren't many people of color in front of the camera back then in the 70s and 80s. Were you cognizant of that? And did you encounter much racism in the business, either overtly or maybe more subtly?
You know, look, there were a lot of reporters. There were some anchors, but far more reporters back in the 70s. Like in New York City, we had Melba Tolliver and John Johnson and Gil Noble and Bill McCrary and
Bob Teague. Live at Five crew, right?
Yeah, you know. But, you know, then you, Vic Miles on WCBS. But, you know, and then you got into smaller markets and there were fewer. But, look, there's the... the subconscious racism, but you know, I worked with that same anchor I had talked about. You know, one night had been accosted by a homeless black guy that we all knew, but this guy for some reason that night bopped my anchor on the back of the head. And the next day, he's telling everybody how, oh my gosh, he was, you know, assaulted and mugged, and now we're on the air, and his wife Mona is about to introduce me, and we're live, and he said, "Mona, before you introduce Al. I have to tell you this. I don't know if you know it, but last night, one of your people attacked me."
Oh, wow.
And I that's one of those moments where time just stands still, and you're not quite sure. You're like abrupt in outrage. What do I? And I looked at him. I said, "Doug, why in the world would a weatherman attack you?" And then just kept going into the weather. But the whole time, I'm like, "Oh my God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen?" And the switchboard lit up. People were outraged. And he was suspended, then was demoted to field anchor, and then eventually left the station. But, wow. You know, I knew him. I was shocked that he came out with that. But it's, you know, and I'm sure he didn't think it was a racist statement, but there you have it.
That wouldn't fly these days for sure. And I think that you said you were actually more worried about your weight than the color of your skin being a problem for you.
And listen, I know that if I was a woman, I would have never gotten out of Syracuse weighing what I did. You know, and I gained and lost and gained and lost and gained and lost. But it was always something that I was very self-conscious about. And there were health issues. Thankfully, my blood pressure was fine. My cholesterol was fine. I just weighed way too much. It was putting too much skeletal strain and probably strain on my heart. So, you know, I found that I think weight was more of a factor in my career than race. But I'm sure that was part of it as well.
You've been in the business for 40 years, but how many of those years have you now been at the Today Show?
I started full-time at Today in 96. Okay. I started filling in for Willard in like 1985.
Wow. So that's pretty much your home since for 96. A long time now.
Yeah.
Wow. And now the Today Show comes out at, I guess on the East Coast, what, 7 a.m., is that right?
7 a.m., yep.
So you must have to get up pretty early. Walk us
through
a typical day.
I get up about 3:45 each morning.
What, 3:45?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, here's the deal.
Several hours before me, I'll tell you that.
I write about this in the book, and that I say get up an hour before you have to. Uh-huh. A, you're not rushing, you're not crazed, but B, that quiet to me is worth its weight in gold. Mm-hmm. You know, there are no emails to answer, there are no texts to send, the kids aren't bothering you. It's your time. And even now, you know, on a Saturday, I like getting up around 6:30 before everybody else is up, even before the dog. And I can just kind of sit there and just kind of collect my thoughts and just be.
But one day in your career, you actually overslept only once, right?
In
all those years, huh? What
yeah. Happened? And technically, see, I was doing a show for the Weather Channel called Wake Up with Al. It started at 5 a.m. I stayed till about 6:45 and then went over to the Today Show. And this one morning, I just overslept. The show started at 5. I woke up at 5:20. It's like, oh, geez. Okay. I'll be there by 6. So I was late for that show, but I was on time for the Today Show. Yet it was like front page news. It was on USA Today. It was online, Yahoo News, this, that. I'm like, really? Are things that slow that a weatherman was late for his cable morning show?
Yeah, you made news with that, huh? Even though you made the show. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's like, seriously?
Well, on a more serious side, in the book, you actually tell the story of being in Cancun to cover Hurricane Dean, but even by then, I guess you were no stranger to hurricanes. I wonder, what was the most harrowing in-person encounter you have had with a major weather event?
I would say Hurricane Wilma in 2005. Mm-hmm. That was the year that we had so many hurricanes, we ran out of letters and went to the Greek alphabet. That was the same year as Katrina. And so now we're at Wilma, and this is in August. I'm sorry, it was in October. And I was out on a balcony, 100-mile-per-hour winds or more gusts, and a camera guy was literally out of camera range holding onto my legs so I could stand up in the wind. And one gust came and just blew us both over. And I thought, you know, this could turn bad very quickly. We better get inside. And so we did, but it was the only time I've ever had that. That and Superstorm Sandy, I was on a dune reporting and my camera guy, was an Australian, was up on the second floor balcony of a hotel shooting across to me. And we're waiting to go on. And he says, mate, I don't think that looks safe. I think you ought to get out of there. So let me just do this one last hit and we'll be good. We do the hit for Nightly News and get off the dune. And not more than 15 minutes later, it collapses.
Ooh.
And the dunes all up and down the beach have collapsed. And now the beach, the ocean is rushing in. And we literally have to pack up and get out like in a matter of minutes, because the water is now rising up over the wheels of the satellite truck. And we just get out. And the next morning, you know, we come out of our hotel. And at first, when I looked outside, I thought, did it snow? And then realized there was sand that had washed on shore, like the you could barely see the tops of the parking meters. And the sand had filled up the street like that eight blocks in. We were walking on top of like 3-4 feet of sand.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So you have on multiple occasions have willingly walked into situations like
yes.
that. what
yes,
do your producers say when you want to get out there and get out in the rain and the craziness and the
well,
wind?
Well, you know, they want to make sure you're safe. And I yeah. listen, I like my life as much as the next person. So I am not going to go out of my way for dangerous situations. But, yeah. you know, you try to get out there and cover it.
Yeah, well, I have to say, you definitely come across as a man who loves his job. And I think you say in the book that you call being a weatherman the ultimate sweet spot of news broadcasting. What is it that you love so much about it?
Well, you're live. Mm-hmm. You're talking about something people care about, no matter who you are, where you're from. It cuts across all lines. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think everybody loves. Mm-hmm. And you get to be yourself. It's I love it.
Now, in addition to your day job, you got to star on Broadway in the Broadway musical The Waitress. I'm not aware of you as a song and dance man, Al. So was there
not.
A steep
I'm
learning
not.
Curve there?
It was. I only had one song. I take it from an old man. I play old Joe. And I sing to Jenna, the waitress. And I was going to say no. And my daughter, who at the time was a junior at the LaGuardia Performing Arts, the Fame School, said, Dad, it's Broadway. How do you say no to Broadway? I said, but I'd have to sing. She goes, you can talk on pitch. And it was one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had.
Yeah, I'll bet. But very unexpected. And I think you even mentioned in the beginning that even your being a weatherman was very unexpected. And it's just with a little luck and perseverance, it kind of worked out that way. Do you think there's a lesson in this about maybe not getting too attached to your 5-year plan and that sort of thing?
Yeah, don't do a 5-year plan.
Yeah.
Look at everybody's 5-year plan today. We're all at home.
Right.
We're in the midst of a global pandemic, economic upheaval, and social unrest. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's plans out the window. Always say yes.
Always
That's my
say
motto.
Yes to everything.
Well,
what
unless
do you say
it's
no
something
to?
That you, What's you know, if somebody's asked you to kill somebody.
Okay, fair enough.
Say no. Say no. And then even then, it depends on the person.
Is there an example of just a project or an offer that was just a little too out of your area of interest or a little too weird? Or I don't know.
Not
that you
yet.
Said no
Nothing's
to?
Come up
really?
Yet. I refuse. I will say no to bungee jumping and skydiving. Not going to do it.
What about adult movies?
Definitely not going to do it.
Okay, fair enough. I finally got a no out of you.
There you go.
All right, I did it. Well, before we go, I have to ask, what's the worst weather prediction that you ever made? In other words, one where you just ended up being way, way off. Or does that happen anymore?
I don't think it happens that much anymore.
Really?
I mean, every now and then. But, you know, for the most part, you know, the accuracy rate's about 87%. So
that's not bad.
I'll take those odds.
Yeah. Well, again, Al Roker's book is called You Look So Much Better in Person, True Stories of Absurdity and Success. And you can watch Al on Today and the third hour of Today on NBC during the week. Al, thanks for talking with me.
Thank you, Ben. Have a great day. Stay safe.
Thanks again to Al Roker for returning to the podcast. You can order his book, You Look So Much Better in Person, True Stories of Absurdity and Success, on Amazon, Audible, or wherever books are sold. You can watch Al every weekday on NBC's The Today Show and follow him on Twitter at Al Roker. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.